Hello? Okay.
Let's see. All right, this talk is about Kronecker coefficients. So let me just start by telling you what they are. So we're going to denote them G lambda mu nu for partitions lambda mu and nu of the same size. So these are usually defined as the multiplicities of irreducible net tensor product of SN representations. But for my purposes, I want to define them sort of in the Schirweil dual version. So let's let V, W, and X equals V tensor W be, I guess, let's see, for now, vector spaces over C, and later we're going to have maybe over K equals Q, adjoin some variable U, or maybe we'll take, we want to use C. Okay. And all right, so let's let these be of dimensions dv, dw, and dx, where these dv and dw will usually be 2. So that's what I mean by 2-row Kronecker. And there's a natural map from U of GLV tensor U of GLW to U of GLX. And so this is a little maybe easier to think about for the Lie groups, is just given by tensoring matrices. So we have a matrix for V and a matrix for W, and we tensor them. We get a matrix for V tensor W. Okay, and then let's just defix notation. So let X nu be the highest weight I guess U of GLX irreducible. And then we look at the restriction of X nu to U of GLV tensor U of GLW. And this is isomorphic to the sum of V lambda tensor W mu G lambda mu. So we want to be more precise. These are partitions of at most dV rows. So this is notation I like to use, and mu is partition most dw rows, where nu is some partition of R. So these are the multiplicities that show up here are the Kronecker coefficients. Okay, so the Kronecker problem. Is to find a positive combinatorial formula for the G lambda union. Okay? So this is something that's typical to do. You have some coefficients that you know are positive. And you want sort of a nice positive way of counting them. You want some sort of reasonable to compute formula that gives these coefficients. Okay, so this problem has been around for quite some time, and it's sort of accepted to be quite difficult. The cases that are known so far, I guess Lescu worked out the case for hook shapes. Remmel and Whitehead in 94 did the two-row case. So in lambda and mu have two rows. But the formula is actually not positive. It's quite explicit, but it's kind of a mess. And then recently, Briand, Oriana, and Rosas have a paper where they give a piecewise quadratic quasi-polynomial for these coefficients, and it's piecewise over 74 maximal cells of a fan. So this is something that they did with the help of a computer, I think, to compute these fans and so on. So another thing I wanted to mention that sort of one good piece of evidence that these things are hard is a special case is what's called the stable limit, where you let the first part of the partition get very long. These eventually stabilize, and this is what are called stable Kronecker coefficients. And the special case of these are the Littlewood-Richardson coefficients. So Kronecker coefficients in general are expected to be quite a bit harder. So now I want to sort of, I'm going to assume, unless I say... lambda and mu are two rows. Yeah, so I'm going to assume now that we're in this case, dv dw equals 2, unless I say otherwise. So this is what I call the two-row case. Okay. And now sort of I want to tell you about u tau and the lambda equals mu case. This is sort of an advertisement in some sense for the all the hard work we're going to do. This is sort of a nice formula that comes out. So first I need to define u tau. So u tau is going to be u of GLV tensor u of GLW semi-direct two-element group. And I'm going to let tau be a generator of S2. And so so we have that, say, tau G, tau GV equals GW for G in GL2. Okay, so tau... conjugation by tau swaps the things in the V and the W part. So this is also the Ruth product of UGL2 with S2. Okay. So let me tell you what the irreducibles of this thing are. So they're not much different from the irreducibles of just UGLV tensor UGLW. So you tau irreducibles. Maybe this is a little funny notation, but lambda mu is just defined to be lambda tensor W mu plus V mu tensor W lambda. And I want to also specify that if I take the highest weight vector in this guy, eta lambda mu, then tau gives me eta mu lambda. And then the other things I can get, so let's let epsilon be plus or minus 1, and then vw epsilon lambda is defined to be v lambda tensor w lambda, where tau now acts on the highest weight vector with eigenvalue given by epsilon plus or minus 1. Okay. So now I'm going to define sort of the Kronecker coefficient g epsilon lambda nu is going to be the multiplicity of VW epsilon lambda in the restriction u tau of x nu. Okay. So this is also equal to equal to the multiplicity of m nu in S2 m lambda or wedge 2. So this is epsilon equals 1, this is epsilon equals minus 1, wedge 2. Okay. So this is maybe the easier way to say it. So we take m lambda, the tensor m lambda, and we split it into two parts. And one part is this. So just write down the statement that should be clear from this, but plus 1 lambda nu plus g minus 1 lambda nu is equal to g of lambda lambda. Okay, so we just broke that Kronecker coefficient into two parts. Okay? And then the formula, well, okay, so first let's package. Let's write our partitions in the notation I use for this is with brackets. So bracket L1, L2, and this I mean, and I'm also going to write nu is nu 1 up to nu 4, and this is n for, I guess I want to do this, for n1, and I have that nu I minus nu I plus 1 equals n I. So these n's and the l's just count the number of columns of that height. N4 is the number of height 4 columns in the shape nu. And L1 is the number of height 1 columns in the shape nu. Okay, so we're just reindexing that. And then we're going to set this generating function. So we'll just package these into a generating function to make them look nice. Of x is the sum for lambda as a partition that most two rows of g epsilon lambda nu x to the L1. Okay, so we fix our nu, and then we let our lambda vary. So there's only one number that we need to specify lambda once r is fixed. Okay, and then the theorem I guess I forgot to mention, I had it written up there, that this is joint work with Catton Momley and Malin Sifoni. So the theorem is just, we can write down explicitly what these Kronecker coefficients are. So there are four cases, N1, N2, N3. So depending on the parities, so which I'll write this way, so N1 equals minus N2 plus N3, epsilon equals 1. So this is wrong. So N2, N3, N4. Okay, so depending on what epsilon is in the parity of N2, N3, and N4, we're in one of four cases. I'll just write dot, dot, dot there. There's some other parity conditions. And then where this notation, so this brace thing of k is just x to the k plus x to the k minus 2 plus up to, I guess, 1 if k is even And up to x if k is odd. Okay. So we just go down in jumps of two. So essentially, this is saying that we take a lattice of we take a cube of lattice points, and then we take some hyperplane slices. The number of lattice points in that slice is the Kronecker coefficient with these sort of parity conditions and slight variations here. Okay, so this is the add. All right, so now let's talk about how we get a formula like this. So as a sort of a warm up, I want to tell you about Schurweil duality and canonical bases. Okay, so there's a couple reasons I want to tell you about this now. So one is that we're going to be using sort of special bases to understand, to connect combinatorics with representation theory. And I wanted to show you a simpler case of where that happens very nicely. And we're also going to use this case in our the basis we get for the Kronecker problem. Okay, so let me tell you what cells are in general. So if H is a K-algebra for some field K, and M is an H module with basis B, then define preorder of B as follows. We say that BI is less than or equal to BJ if there exists some H and H such that HBJ such that BI appears in HBJ with non-zero coefficient. Okay, so what I mean by this is these BI, BJ are in B. So we take the elements of our basis, we act on them by our algebra, and we expand the result in terms of our basis, and we see what we pick up with non-zero coefficient. Okay, so equivalence classes of this preorder are the cells of, I guess, M, B. Or maybe I want to specify the H cells of M, B if there's more than one algebra acting on my module. Okay. So what happens is you can think of this as a preorder, or I like to think of it as a directed graph, the strong components are the cells. And then the preorder gives rise to a partial order on cells. And if you take any lower order ideal of cells spans a submodule. And cells, so then if you intersect so lower order ideals give you submodules, upper order ideals give you quotients, and if you intersect the two, then you get a subquotient, so I call this a cellular subquotient, and a cell is a special case, so cells always give subquotients. And in nice cases, these subquotients are irreducible. So if you sort of take a generic basis for a module, then you just get one big cell and it doesn't tell you anything. But there are cases that we'll come across that where these cells are very nice. So let me tell you about one. So so V tensor R, so V is the same thing that it was before. Well, but I guess now I want it to be a K module. For so V A, I'll say Q of U module. And then V tensor R is a U GLV, I guess, cross HR bimodule. So now I've gone to the quantum world. So this HR is the Heck algebra of type A. So if you're not familiar with these objects, think that at when we set, so I use actually the parameter U instead of Q. So the reason for that is because in the quantum group side, my U is what is usually Q, and in the Heck algebra side, my U is what is usually Q to the half. But anyway, so when you set U equals 1, you just get U of GLV cross, I guess, the group algebra of the symmetric group acting on V tensor R. Okay, so we want to sort of connect the representation theory and combinatorics of this, of sort of Schurwild duality here. And so theorem, I guess this is sort of combining results of Kazdan-Lustig and Bernowski-Lustig, though they don't phrase this theorem this way. So V tensor R has a basis C sub K, where K is a word in the letters 1 up to DV of length R. And it satisfies, so I'm going to tell you what the cells are. So the decomposition of, let's call this thing B sub V, B sub V into HR cells is given by insertion tableau. So we let our tableau run over a semi-standard Young tableau, and then the cell is the set of basis elements such that they insert. The insertion tableau of this word is T. I guess I should maybe decorate this SSYT with this is in numbers 1 through DV and of size R. Okay. So the HR cells are indexed by insertion tableau. Maybe you can't see this anymore. And the cells for the decomposition into UQ GLD cells is BD is T in standard Young tableau of those guys with recording tableau fixed. Okay. And moreover, these the HR cells and I guess let's see, are irreducible or yield, I guess, because you have to take cellular subquotient yield irreducible HR modules. Similarly for UQ GLD. Okay, let's see a picture of this. So All right, so not yet. No. What do I have to do? Yeah, it's up here. Screens and blink. Maybe the thing has to warm up. Oh, there we go. Okay. Maybe I'll have to leave this up. Okay. All right. So here's a picture of the case where R is 3 and dV is 2. And so I have these canonical basis elements, and then I've told you how to expand them in terms of monomials in sort of the natural weight basis. Just the V sub a number is just like the tensor product of those V monomials, and the V sub I are just the natural weight basis for V. And then these arrows are the action of F, okay, and the coefficients are the coefficients you pick up. So you can sort of read off the cells from like if you look at this bottom string, this is sort of your SL2 string of length 4, and it's, you know, got fixed recording tableau, and then the insertion tableau tells you where you are inside that cell. So this is actually matches up nicely with Bruce's talk yesterday. If you want to expand these things explicitly in terms of monomials, then this is exactly the web basis. In the SL2 case, agrees with the canonical basis. So maybe I'll do a little example. So the way you want to think about these things is you write down some word in ones and twos. And then you think of twos as left parentheses and ones as right parentheses, and you do parentheses matching. And, well, let's make it a little bit more interesting. Okay. So then you draw in arcs corresponding to those parentheses matchings. And then from those arcs, it's easy to read off the expansion in terms of monomials. But what you have to, there's sort of two, for the number of, if the number of arcs is k, then the number of terms in this monomial expansion is 2 to the k. And basically, you just pick up sort of two terms for each arc in some sense. And then it's like tensor producting those together. Okay. So this we sort of have to understand to move on to the next stuff. But I agree that it's definitely fast if it's the first time you've seen something like this. But this is a very nice picture, sort of connecting this combinatorics of RSK with the representation theory. Okay, so the shapes of these things are the right shapes for the irreducibles of the subquotients that they span. Okay. So let me just say, maybe I'll put it here as well. So let me tell you about this Hart product construction of Lustig. So it's not true that that, for instance, if I take a tensor product of canonical basis elements, this is not equal to the concatenation. And so if you take the tensor product of two modules with basis and you want to get a new basis for it, you know, you can just take the tensor product of those bases. But there's actually a better thing to do, which is sort of this Hart product construction. And that is, in this case, actually the Hart just corresponds to concatenating. So this is equal to C2, 2, 1, 1. So that Hart product is just concatenating words. But in general, it's sort of so B1 Hart B2 is equal to B1 tensor B2 plus U inverse some stuff in, so stuff in U inverse times your basis.
Yeah,
okay, I'll move that over. Okay. So it's it's B1 tensor B2 sort of plus lower order terms is what the heart looks like. Okay. Okay, good. So now, now that we've got this down, let's start talking about the Kronecker problem. Okay, so we're just going to denote X bar be X as a U Q tau module. So U Q tau is quantum version of this U tau I defined before. It's just the Rieth product of UQ GL2 with S2. Okay. So let me just draw, to sort of fix some notation, let me draw a picture of this thing. So this is V1 tensor W1. If I act by FW, I get V1 tensor W2. If I act by FV, I get V2 tensor W1. Act by W here, again, V2, tensor 2, FV, so on. So this is sort of my, this is a picture of a basis for X bar. It's four-dimensional. It's equal to, SL, it's equal to a shape, I guess, V, one box, tensor W, one box. Okay. And the action of tau here just takes, so there's no minus sign here, it just takes you to eigenvalues 1. And I also am going to sort of write these sometimes. I'm going to write my V word on top, so I'm going to write sort of a 1 and then a 2. Sometimes this is going to be x2 2, x2 1. Okay, so my V word goes on top, my W word goes on the bottom. So the goal is to construct UQ tau module X nu bar such that at U equals 1, X nu bar equals 1 is isomorphic to the restriction U tau of X nu. So we can still restrict this GLX module to U tau. And so we sort of want to note here that this is not obvious sort of how to do this because we don't know how to quantize this map into U of GLX. Okay. And actually, there's some indication that it can't be done. But we sort of just build this thing in another way. All right. No, it's still just S2. Yeah. There is an H acting somewhere, but I'm not going to talk about that. So that's fine. So the first thing we're going to do is we'll first do this for nu is just a single column. Okay. And let me just tell you that the restriction of, UQGLV tensor UQGLW of X, of wedge R of X bar is equal to the sum over lambda of V lambda tensor W lambda Okay, so these are some of the easiest Kronecker coefficients. One of the shapes is a single column shape, then the other two shapes have to be transpose of each other. And the multiplicity of these Kronecker coefficients is 1. So this is another way of writing that down. Okay. And then there's a reason that we actually want to think of this as sitting inside x to the tensor R. And we want this as a module with basis. And I'll call these of non-standard columns. So abbreviate NSC. Okay, so there's a general way to define these, but let me just tell you, we can write it down explicitly in the two-row case because there just aren't that many, right? The X is four-dimensional, so we have 1, 4, 6, 4, 1 is how many of these things there are, and I'll just show them to you. Okay. So here they are. So what does this mean? So again, the top row is a word in V, and the bottom row is a word in W. And then I'm taking this canonical basis in V and in W. So for example, C1221 is equal to V12 tensor W21 minus U inverse W12. Okay. So that's from that formula for these canonical basis elements we had before. Okay, good. So so we wrote these down, and then we sort of the numbers here, we just if you want to, sometimes it's convenient to use the numbers 1 through 4 instead of two numbers that are between 1 and 2. And the way to go back and forth is just take the number mod the number 1 through 4, take it mod 2 to get the W word. And for the V word, you say 1 and 2 give you 1, and 3 and 4 give you 2. Okay. So let's go back here. And now that we have this case worked out, let's go to the next step. Okay, so next, we define y bar of nu prime. So there's a reason that I want to index this by the transpose partition. Would be nu prime sub 1 tensor nu prime sub L x bar. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't occur. The choice of putting the numbers in the columns is sort of up to me, but the way I've done it is so that the column reading word, so if you read up your column, then it has sort of the right reading word if you use this rule to go between numbers in 1 through 4 and pairs of numbers in 1 and 2. So we have this tensor product now, and this gets so this has basis NST, so non-standard tabloids. We denote NST of nu prime, and these are just sequences columns, I guess, NSC of heights, mu prime 1, mu prime 2, mu prime L. And these are identified, so identify. So we have some sequence of columns, and we identify this with the Hart product. So I'm going to write these Hart products with a Hart bar. So Hart is Lustig's Hart product for for the base modules. Wedge new 1 prime x bar comma NSC dot 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 wedge new L prime x bar NSC I guess new anyway so new 1 prime okay so you when you're doing this Hart product construction you have to say what basis it's with respect to and actually you can, if you realize these things as sitting inside x to the tensor nu I, then you can use again this Hart product from that we had before, from sort of s sitting inside x to the tensor r. But these Hart products actually don't agree. So one of the things that sort of comes up in this work is computing one of these products in terms of the other. This ends up being important. Okay, so, but anyway, we have this definition. And then what we do is we define for L of nu equals 2, L of nu prime equals 2, we define y bar delta nu sits inside y bar nu prime, I guess. Well, I guess I'll just so that I guess y. So this is the thing that we want a quotient by y nu delta nu prime. So if we define this, if we define x nu to be this, then we want to require that this property that we originally wanted, x nu at u equals 1. Is isomorphic to restriction u tau of x. Okay, so we sort of force it to work out in the two column case by just killing what we have to. And actually we're lucky. So it turns out that that this in the two column case this y bar nu is actually multiplicity free as a UQ tau module. So once you sort of know the Kronecker coefficients for this small case, you know what stuff you have to kill. And it's not true just as a UQGLV tensor UQGLW module. So this is an important place where this extra structure of the tau comes into play. So it makes it so that there's no choice here. And actually we didn't quite realize that for a while. At first we just sort of defined these things that we had to quotient out by hand, and actually that still ends up being useful. And so let me show you just some pictures of so we make explicit this thing that we have to quotient by. Okay, so here's one example. So this is for 2-2, and so this is a base, this is I guess part of a basis of y bar this delta 2-2, and here the horizontal lines are the action of FV, and the vertical ones are FW, and so you can compute these rules sort of using well-known things about SL, about sort of canonical bases of SL2 modules, compute what the action of FV and FW do on these canonical basis elements. And okay, so here's another example. So these ones where these 1 over bracket 2 show up are sort of harder to deal with. Let me tell you. I can just leave this one. So let me tell you a little bit about the difficulties that we run into here. So we define in general, so for L of nu greater than 2, define y delta nu prime to be the sum minus 1, L minus 1 of, so we just take each consecutive 2 rows and add that to the things that we're quotient by. And then in the rest, we put nu 1. We just put the ordinary thing here. I minus 1 tensor this part that we want to kill in these two particular consecutive columns. And then we define x nu. Okay. So this is the x nu that we were looking for. Okay. And so what are the difficulties that come up when we quotient by this? So we want to understand this quotient combinatorially. We want to see what happens to this. We have this nice basis for y bar nu prime, and we want to see what happens to that under the quotient. So one thing that's tricky about this is that sum is not a direct sum, and the other thing is that it's not so obvious how to express those submodules in terms of this canonical basis. So that's some of the work that needs to be done, and that sort of becomes particularly tricky, but still doable. When you have this non-integrality, these 1 over bracket 2 showing up. Okay. One of the things we do to organize this is we sort of introduce, we don't introduce new relations, but we identify some more relations. So inside the 1-1-1 case, when nu has columns of height 1, there's a particular submodule of this y delta 1-1 that we specify, and so you can get this, you know, it, so it's in that definition, right? I don't have to redefine what this y bar delta 1-1 is for 3 columns, but it's harder to find this relation in some sense, so we sort of add it by hand, and then we sort of have enough to do combinatorics. So first, we're just going to organize these relations a little bit. So first, let me tell you about a grading on this y bar nu prime. So an invariant is one of these NST. And we call it an invariant because the action of the SL2 in V and SL2 in W kills these things. Okay. And then we want to define the degree of an NST basically to be the number of invariants it contains. But you have to get that definition right, you have to do a little work. So you actually want to say that it's the number of invariant column pairs. So an invariant column pair is 2 columns that are paired by two arcs. So you basically, you can write down this V word and this W word, and then you pair arcs as left and right parentheses, so you have your V arcs and your W arcs. And then you really only care about the ones that are external to columns, not the ones that live inside columns. And then so I've drawn some of those arcs, so the columns that pair up with two arcs are invariants, and then we just count them, that's the degree. And then we define a graph with vertex set SNST. So this is so we want to add in some signs and some scales to these basis elements. The one tricky thing that comes up is that we have to actually divide by bracket 2 to the degree of our NST if we want to get this canonical basis to work out correctly in the end. And then, so I'm not going to tell you exactly what this graph is, but the edges basically correspond to saying that two of these NST become the same in this quotient. And then you also require this degree thing that you draw an edge only if you go up in, weak, or you go up in degree, or not strictly up. But, and so then the strong components we call non-standard tabloid classes. And so this is some way of understanding what happens to this basis when we send this NST basis to the quotient, and then we throw out some of them. So what can happen is some of these equivalence classes, you can sort of run around, and it can tell you that if it can basically tell you that, you know, that A, that in the quotient you have something like so here is an example of this graph. In the quotient, you can have something like A is equivalent to B is equivalent to minus A, and then you know that A is equivalent to 0. So then you throw out those components. So here's a picture of this graph, and what we do is we throw out all the components that have edges to other components, and the ones that for which this sort of thing happens. Okay, so there are two components that survive. It's this one and this one, and those correspond to the Kronecker coefficient in this case being 2. So this is for lambda and mu being 5, 3, 5, 3, and nu is the conjugate of 3, 2, 2, 1. Okay. Okay, so this is very fast, but just to give you a little bit of a flavor of what's involved, we're just sort of understanding this quotient combinatorially in terms of the spaces. All right, so here's another picture of a cell of this resulting basis. So this is shape 3, 2, 1, and then we have sort of these equivalence classes of basis elements. And then the action of F and V, and so we get this nice cell out of it. So back to this slide. So the main theorem is that this sort of resulting set of non-standard tabloid classes is an upper global crystal basis for X nu. And also that this thing that we wanted, that we desired, is also true. Okay, and so once you have these things, sort of general facts, about global crystal bases tell you that you can count the number of cells of the right shape, and that gives you the Kronecker coefficient. So now counting Kronecker coefficients comes down to counting these different types of cells, or if you like, you can just restrict to the highest weight elements in each cell and count those. Let me just tell you so how you sort of get from that to something like the formula that I wrote down in the beginning. So one thing to simplify this a little bit is that you can count these basis elements that don't have any invariants in them, for which their degree is 0. And then actually it's pretty manageable. So it turns out that there's basically 8 1 parameter families of these things. And so it turns out that a nice way to describe these cells is by what these external V and W arcs are when you write down the V and W words and look at the arcs that go exterior to columns. In some cases like these, there's a relation that I haven't told you whether it's V and W. I mean, for this actual, NST here, this is a type W edge, but it's equivalent to one where there's a V arc there. So I haven't written it down. So I sort of want to forget that information in certain cases. So I don't know. I'm sort of hoping that this is maybe the beginnings of some sort of graphical calculus in this setting. Because this seems like really the right way to describe these components. So you write down sort of these 8 different kinds of invariant-free non-standard tabloid classes that can occur, and then it's easy to read off what the corresponding lambda and mu are. And then you can draw a picture like this. So this is for fixed nu. I'm plotting sort of Kronecker coefficients in L1 and M1. So remember, L1 and M1 were the number of parts. So this is sort of number of height 1 columns of lambda. Okay. And then in terms of the heights of the columns of nu, which are given by the n's, I can write down these different line segments, and each of these 8 line segments corresponds to these 8 cases. And then this basically tells me exactly what the Kronecker coefficients are, except now I have to add in these invariants. So I can sort of specify some even number of height 3 columns to be invariants, and even number of height 2 columns to be invariants, and so on. So basically I'm tiling such things, such pictures sort of over the plane, and I'm stacking them up, and this gives me Kronecker coefficients. So for example, the lambda case is looking at the diagonal here, and there's actually 4. This line in the middle has multiplicity 2. So those 4 terms that showed up correspond to these 4 cases. There's a paper by Mike and 2 others who I'm now forgetting, Catalan Kronecker products. Right over here is one of them. Hi. they give a formula in the case that L1 is 0, say. So that sits outside here. These coefficients sort of naturally occur as sort of the sum of these 2 terms, and then you have to sort of sum up over choosing how many invariants you have. Okay. And now in maybe a minute, I'll just flash up something about how this is related to geometry. So unfortunately, I don't really know too much about this yet, and I would be happy if you could tell me more. Okay, but we can look at say V dual tensor, W dual tensor, Z dual as a G variety, where G is GLV cross GLW cross GLZ, and the coordinate ring is this sim of V tensor W tensor Z, and when we decompose it into G reducibles, it's again Kronecker coefficients. Okay. So the basis that we have for these spaces, V lambda tensor W mu, some G lambda mu nu, gives a basis for R. And we can consider this basis for our ring as a basis for the action of the group or of the enveloping algebra and the action of the ring. So the action of the group is sort of degree preserving, and then the action of the ring takes you up in degree. And so it's sort of natural to conjecture, and I've thought about this a little bit, but I haven't checked too carefully, that the homogeneous prime G ideals, of R, are actually cellular submodules in this for these actions. So there are only finitely many homogeneous prime G ideals in this case, finitely many G orbits. So for example, in the dimension Z equals 2 case, there are these orbits. And for example, this is sort of the most interesting one, this tangential variety, and we can sort of, and I'm pretty sure, but I haven't checked carefully, that sort of the ideal corresponding to this is exactly those, corresponds to exactly those basis elements that contain this height 2 invariant, and that this ideal is cellular. So that's actually, so this doesn't really, you know, the geometry is sort of well understood in this case, but it's actually a pretty strong statement, even in this fairly easy case, that these things be cellular. There's sort of a lot of things that could potentially go wrong, but it looks like it is. Anyway. For this example, Z is two-dimensional. But you can also look at the Z equals 4 case, and then there are two more orbits. Yeah. So G is the GLV cross GLW cross GLZ. Yep, that's right. So these are subspace varieties. So you take the orbit of a point so this guy is like the orbit of something that looks like V1 tensor, W1 tensor, Z1 plus V2 tensor, W2 tensor, Z1. So you sort of fix that last coordinate. Okay, that's all. Thanks for listening.